Hello and welcome to Quote Unquote Guilty, the only guilty pleasure podcast with air quotes in the title. I am your host, Joe Ketchum, and I'm joined today by Jeff Burnham. How's it going, Jeff?
I am doing all right. Tired from a late
me
night
too.
Screening.
I was there.
Well, no, you weren't up screening it with me, though. But
I'm
was up very
here.
Late. And you're here.
Both of us.
And yeah, and Al's here too. Hi, Al. That's Jeff's son, Alistair Burnham.
Hey.
Co-host of Cadavercast.
No, I was going to say it.
Okay, I'm sorry. Cut you off.
Why?
You'll just mute me on my end.
Yeah, just cut you, do my thing, just ignore you whenever it's convenient. How's it going, Al?
Hi. Doing good.
Good.
I had a lot of stuff to do, so I took a long sleep.
Sorry, what was that?
I said that I have a lot of stuff to do, so I just took a long sleep.
Well, I'll try not to take up too much of your valuable time. I know you're a busy man.
Yeah, I know.
What are we talking about today, Al?
Enemy Mine.
Enemy Mine, that's right. And you may not remember this, but there's a specific reason I wanted to have you on to talk about Enemy Mine.
What?
A couple of years ago, for my birthday, I think, your dad sent me a copy of Enemy Mine. And the way he tells it, you guys were out DVD shopping, and you picked out the DVD that you wanted, and he said that you guys already owned it, and then you said, that's okay, I'll get it for Uncle Joe, and you guys sent it to me for my birthday.
Huh.
I don't even remember that at all.
Me either. Both of us don't remember that.
Well, I promise it happened, even though...
Yeah, I believe
you. That's what Jeff tells me happened. So yeah, today we're talking about Enemy Mine with Dennis Quaid and nobody else that I'm aware of.
Lou Gossett Jr.
Is that who plays
Jerry?
Jerry.
Yeah, and
I didn't look it up.
And Brian James is in there as well.
And who is that?
He plays the evil mine operator in the end of the movie.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And he was in Blade Runner and Tango and Cash. A lot of 80s stuff.
Why are you going to the end of the movie?
No, I was just saying who's in it. I know, this isn't Cadavercast.
Yeah.
He's just saying there is one other recognizable person at the end of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I recognize some of the other people from other 80s movies. Actually, oh, I just figured it out. Holy cow. One of the other pilots who shows up near the end. We are jumping to the end a little bit. But only recognizable to me in the end as one of the people looking at Dennis Quaid in like the stasis pod. And I was trying to figure out the whole time we were watching the movie, who is that guy? I think he's in Tremors, and he's the guy who I think gets sucked into the tire in Tremors.
Okay. It's been a really long time since I've seen Tremors.
If I'm remembering it correctly, or he's in Last Starfighter. I know that's a huge broad range of two movies there, but I recognized another guy from somewhere.
Okay.
But yeah, the movie's basically the two people, Dennis Quaid and Lou Gossett Jr.
Okay. Yeah, it's really just a two-man play on this desolate planet. There's a little bit at the beginning and a bit at the end with other people. But mostly, yeah, it's Jerry and what's Dennis Quaid's character's name?
Dawitch.
Davidge. Willis, that's it. And they are the humans and the Drax.
Well, let's let Al explain it.
Sure, yeah. That you'll probably do a better job than I will. I'm stammering through it.
Yeah,
Al, what's the movie about?
The humans and the Drax, their space is their new battleground, they say. And two of them, they get into this different planet. Where meteors fall. And
yes.
Other things like other monster alien things.
That's yeah. Right. So yeah, humans, it says at the beginning of the movie that humans have achieved world peace and they work together as a society to explore the universe where they immediately get into an intergalactic war with the Drax.
Over
who are these
mining rights or something.
Yeah, it says something about
what
mining rights.
Because
this is what I love about this, and most of the podcast I'm going to defer to Al, but I love the idea that Earth unites peacefully under capitalism in order to explore and pillage the universe of all its resources. Like, that is even possible.
America won the world, and then we spread out across the stars.
Yeah, the Drax declare what they call squatters' rights on all these other planets. Planets that they've lived on for 1,000 years. Earth's like, we legally annex this planet you live on, and now it's ours to pillage all of the resources. Yeah. So
we're just going to take this because we say we can. And if you have a problem with it, we'll wipe you out.
The planet that the two guys live on does not make sense because the Drake have already been there before them. So that does not make sense.
This will be planets that Earth is fighting them for? Well, the planet they're on is a deserted planet. It's sort of an unsettled planet because it's really, really dangerous.
Meteors.
Oh, Zerky.
What is that?
Yeah, no one lives there.
Zerky.
Zerky. That's the Drac word for meteors.
Yeah, that's right.
Joe, had you seen this movie before we bought it for you?
No, I'd never even heard of it.
Oh, okay. Because, I was so confused yesterday wondering why you chose this for the show. And I was like, wait, how is this a quote-unquote guilty movie? I was like, I thought everybody who's seen it loves it.
Probably, but I don't know that many people who have even seen it or are aware of it.
I grew up on it. It's a movie I watched a million times as a kid. Our friend Cameron and I used to constantly say at each other, Da witch ugly head.
Yeah, that was weird.
Do you like how the Drac talked?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
I know.
I like those, alligator, snake tongue things. Those things are pretty cool.
The ones that live underground?
The things in the swamp.
Yeah, the, sand.
Or, yeah, I guess it's not a swamp, it's in the ground, things. Yeah.
They're like quicksand sarlacc.
Yeah.
Alligator things.
What's the
these
one?
These tentacles that grab you.
What's the one in Return of the Jedi that Luke has to fight? Like, he's dropped in to fight that one.
I want to say a Ragnarok, but that's not right. It's a Rancor. Rancor, that's what it is.
So it's like a Sarlacc pit under quicksand with a Rancor head.
Yeah.
It's like all these Star Wars monsters in one with a hint of the trash compactor monster, too. So it's like those three Star Wars monsters combined.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That, its tongue looks like another alien, right?
Yeah, like its own entity.
Yeah, and it eats this, pig turtle thing.
Mm-hmm.
Pig turtle thing?
Pig turtle thing, yeah. That's what
Daddy
called
it. It's like a big beetle.
It.
It's like a big roach.
Yeah, but it's got, kind of a pig snout.
Yeah, and then a turtle and a shell. So it's a pig turtle thing.
Pig turtle roach.
Yeah, and the pig turtle roaches have evolved to be resilient to meteors falling. They make their shelter. They're zerky proof. So they make their shelter out of their shells.
And then they put the Drake's zerky word. Drax's zerky word into their shell.
They put zerkies into their shell.
Yeah, the word Zerky into the
Zerky,
shell.
Zerky proof shell. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the branding of their shells.
Da witch.
Ugly head.
Ugly head.
I like how he went. I like how he laughed.
Yeah. He's got a great laugh.
Yeah.
I love the characterization of Jerry and the just the performance of it and the way he's put together and the language and, he gets a whole backstory where he's very religious. I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
He's great.
Gossett delivers an amazing performance on, every level as Jerry. Well, of course, I mean, just to step back for a minute, this whole story begins with a space dog fight between the ships, and a dog fight is an aerial fight, Alistair, between planes, but this is spaceships, and they crash and they're enemies,
right? That's why it's called Elamimon.
Yes. Lemony mine.
That's what I said.
Lemony mine. nice lemony pine enemy mine. And they crash on this planet together and, you know, they're enemies, but they're forced to work together in order to survive the conditions on the planet.
Yeah. And then, like, they make a shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Willis makes a very terrible shelter.
Yeah, they fall
off. Not solid.
Yeah.
What do you mean, not then, solid?
Again, he laughs. He laughs because he's like, the thing whole entire falls and he laughs. It's crazy how much times he laughs in the beginning.
Al cackled every time Jerry laughed.
It's a good laugh.
Because it's kind of like a throaty, snorty kind of a laugh. Yeah, it's very specific to like their physiology.
And he basically has no teeth.
Yeah, he's got like 6 teeth.
Yeah, kind of.
Like big, giant teeth.
Yeah, because he has like one of... Yeah, because he's like has one on the side, one in the front, one on the other side. And then on the bottom, one on the side, one on the front, one on the side. He has six giant teeth.
Yeah, they're like amphibians?
Yeah.
The trash?
Yeah. Yeah, because he swims in that lake when he crashes. It seems like he can, like, breathe underwater.
Yeah.
That makeup work, like the mask work and stuff on Jerry is amazing. All of the like, pulsating stuff on the side of his head and his
I was watching gills. That this time, too, like the breathing bladders on the side of his head. It looks so great.
What about, like, on the back? Those on the back of his head.
He's got kind of, like, a insect-like underside to the back of his head, almost.
Yeah, he's like an insect frog thing.
Well, yeah, and they're called frogs. It's like the derogatory term that earthlings use for the Drax. Frogs.
Yeah, there's a couple of weird things he calls them. I don't know if I wrote any of them down.
Toad face.
Yeah, toad face. That's a pretty good one.
They're called woggies by the scavengers.
Woggies.
Pollywogs, I guess.
Pollywogs.
I did think that maybe Willis forgives Jerry a little quickly and is willing to work with him a little quickly at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because his buddy Joey dies.
Oh, can we focus on Joey's death scene for a minute? He gets an absolutely glorious, beautifully written death scene that pays off a bit of dialogue 3 minutes earlier. That gives him a complete story arc. This tiny character whose name I was going to be like, I don't know, I'll just write down, you know, the kid who gets killed. But like by the end, I was like, not Joey.
Yeah, because he's really excited to go on this date with this girl named Murchison.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Dennis Quaid's giving him a hard time as they're heading out for the dogfight. And then they have the battle and they crash and then he's dying. And he has this sweet moment where he's just trying to defend Murchison's honor a little bit. It's like, you guys shouldn't call her the white balloon anymore. It really hurts her feelings. And that's his dying thought is about this girl.
It's so nice. It's such a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
I like the gravestone of the other guy. He's really
like the bloody. When he makes Joey's grave.
And like his face is covered in blood.
Yeah, I mean, they're in a, you know, a spaceship crash.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty bad.
And, like, he puts him under a rock and then puts his helmet on top, his broken helmet.
Yeah, to honor him, his fallen comrade. But, well, I mean, Willis doesn't really have much of a choice but to join Jerry because he gets captured really quickly. He's kind of a garbage soldier.
No.
Yeah, he's a killer pilot, but when he's on foot and hand-to-hand, he's rubbish.
He had an okay idea pouring fuel into the like lake to try to burn Jerry out of there. But then, I mean, you know, if Admiral Akbar had been standing up on the ledge above, he may have been able to stop him. But it was clearly a trap.
He said, burn Burn.
Yeah, burn frog face or burn toad face or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Burn frog face or toad face.
Actually, I wrote it down. He says, burn you mother.
Oh, burn. Oh, he does. Yeah, because he almost swears right there. And then I was like, burn you mother. Maybe there's not any swearing in this movie because I couldn't really remember. It's been a while. I hadn't watched it since I bought the Blu-ray. But
I couldn't remember either.
I
was a little surprised by the language.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of it. And in case any parents are listening and you're like, you let the 5-year-old Alistair watch a movie with this language, we live in Chicago. He hears worse on the street daily, I am sure.
Yeah.
He just knows not to repeat it.
Yeah.
But I love that Jerry immediately learns to swear in English. It's like one of the first things he learns.
There was when we were in high school, there was a foreign exchange student from some Spanish-speaking country. I don't remember where it was from exactly. And the first thing, like, everyone taught him in English was all the swear words.
The Brazilian guy?
I think he was Brazilian. I think you're right.
Is he a bass player, like, in the jazz band?
Maybe. I don't remember him very well other than this little anecdote.
I don't even know what he looks like.
Al, you were not born then, so you wouldn't know him.
He might have run into him on the street. I can't even really remember what he looked like. I just remember this. I remember he existed, and I remember this thing about him that everyone was teaching him swear words.
Well, I like the language aspect of this movie, too.
How, like, they have a language barrier between them?
Yeah, and that they necessarily learn to cross that barrier as quickly as possible. Because,
yeah, like they have pretty quickly.
Learn both languages?
Yeah.
Like, the Drake learns...
The Drac
learns the human language, and the human learns the Drac's language.
Mm-hmm.
So they both learn each other's language.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I find it interesting that Willis learns, like, a cursory, like, enough Drac to get by. No, until Jerry's reading his book. It's essentially like a Bible, and Willis takes a real interest in it, and he says, I suppose you have to actually know the Drac language to, you know, understand the book, and Jerry's like, it helps. And he's like, all right, well, then teach me the Drac language, and becomes his pupil of the teachings of this text, and, like, makes that leap as a character to, like, actually actively try to be a part of this relationship. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's an incredibly well-structured movie. Yeah. And not terribly long. Like, this story should theoretically take about 3 hours, but they knock it out in an hour 45.
Yeah. It's a great
even more surprising because Jerry dies, like, at the end of the second act, and we get his kid.
Zamis.
And then we have that whole relationship develop and build towards the climax of the film.
Yeah, it's about an hour into the movie that Jerry dies. Like, I remember watching it as a kid feeling like that was forever into the story before that happened. Because I just remember it being this epic.
Well, a lot happens in those hour and 40 minutes.
And they say that the Drax get older faster than the humans do.
Yeah, that's important.
Because they're aliens.
Yeah.
For zombies.
He ages faster than a human.
Yeah. He's like a cute baby to a regular kid. Super fast into zombies' life. So crazy.
Yeah, because the Drax reproduce asexually. And I like how the movie refuses to call Jerry or Zamis he, and they refer to them as it. And then when Willis says something about mothers going into labor to Jerry, you know, women going into labor, Jerry gets really defensive and he's like, I'm not a woman. Because he's like, I'm none of those things. Whatever your ridiculous divisions are, that's not me. But then, so he gives birth on this horrible monster planet to little baby zombies who Al absolutely loved.
You were so cute.
Zombies is great. I was wondering why he has, like, an accent. Wouldn't he learns English from Willis. He learns how to speak from Willis. Wouldn't he just talk like a human?
Well, he'd have Drac vocal cords and stuff, which are clearly
okay,
made
so that
more to do, like,
the way he speaks.
Kind of gurgly noise that the Dracs make. The kind of rumble that they make when they talk, which Zamis doesn't really do. Like, he doesn't really have that in his voice. It's like a fusion between what's probably natural for the Drax and, you know, just standard American, you know, accent.
And he can also speak Drax. He takes a hard time for him to learn just Drax with no problem. It takes him like the whole entire movie to do it, basically.
Da Witch?
No, you could say that really fast, but like it takes him a long time to figure out how to say it with no problem.
Yeah, I mean, he learns a ton of Drax. I mean, he clearly spends a lot of time. Well, and what's wild is at the end of the movie when you find out how long he was actually on the planet, everybody's like, wow. And you
how
find
long
out it
was
he was there 3 years.
What?
Yeah, just 3 years. But this movie makes it feel like it's an eternity, you know, that he's there for like a decade or more. But I mean, he learns the Drax language. He learns the lineage of, oh, what is the lineage?
Jareeva.
Jareeva. He learns the lineage of Jareeva. He learns to read the
book.
The book, like their Bible. He raises a Drax child. He does all of this stuff. He goes on like a spirit quest at one point. You know, all of this stuff in 3 years.
Yeah. That's like more than the 3 years. That could take like four. That could take like 5 years to do that, all of that stuff.
You're right. Should have added on that extra 2 years.
Yeah, if it were me, it would have taken well 5 years. 170 generations in the line of Jareeva. So he had to learn them all. I thought it was a really cool scene when they're learning each other's lineage. Jerry starts asking about his parents and his grandparents and wants to know his history too.
Yeah, and it's clear that Willis doesn't, you know, I mean, like a lot of people, it's maybe not so important to him. You know, that, you know, he's a soldier and he's off in space. Earth is this distant memory. For him, family's just, you know, something in the past. Whereas for the Drax, it is forever and it is in them.
Yeah. That's one that I wish they had been on a planet that the Drax and the humans have never, ever been in.
Well, I mean, they technically hadn't, or no, they hadn't. Nobody had been on this planet when they landed. While they were on the planet, the scavengers showed up and took core samples to see if they should mine the planet.
Yeah.
Because Willis was waking up to the ship sounds, and he thought he was going crazy. But yeah, no, they'd never been to this planet. There was nobody on this planet, nothing living there except Sarlacc, quicksand, Rancor monsters, and pig cockroach turtles and stuff.
No, you're totally wrong.
I'm totally wrong.
You are totally
what
wrong.
Makes you think they've been there before, Al?
Do you remember that scene with the dead Drax?
Well, yeah, that was from the scavengers who showed up while they were already on the planet. That's what I was saying, is they showed up to take core samples, and that was after Jerry and Dawitch landed on the planet.
Yeah, because the scavengers have Drax slaves.
Yeah, so they were there. Like, those guys didn't show up, and the dead Drax didn't die there until after Jerry and Willis landed there. So they were the first. Does that make sense?
They were the
first. It's pretty early in the movie, so I see where the confusion comes in there, especially because that Drax is, like, completely rotted, and there's all those empty Pepsi cans. Future Pepsi cans.
Future Pepsi cans.
Space Pepsi.
Space Pepsi, yeah. Because they're not even in a planet. They're, like, not even in a planet at all.
What do you mean?
Because, like, you can see the sky and you can see space.
Oh, like, you can see planets during the daytime on this planet?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, the planets in that system and, like, the moons and stuff are all just probably really, really close.
Or really, really big.
Or really, really big.
Yeah.
I mean, the planet's bombarded with meteors all the time, too, so there's
so it's
clearly a lot of turmoil in that galaxy.
So it's probably just like
system.
a medium-sized planet or something, maybe, kind of. I don't know.
They have one.
It seems like the planet must exist in a
meteor range?
Like a belt?
Yeah, like a meteor belt. Yeah. Because it's bombarded so frequently by meteors that it's the planet itself might just be a big meteor in a meteor belt.
Did you call up Neil deGrasse Tyson for this podcast? Because
no, but I'll tweet him.
Yeah.
He can let me know.
Get Ty on the phone. Good friends.
Good friends. Me and Ty. What else, Al? What else do you like about this movie?
About Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, let's talk about Mickey Mouse. If at first you don't succeed, try again.
And then you find Mickey Mouse.
I like that Jerry immediately recognized that philosophy is a teaching of what's the deity's name? I wrote it down. Hang on. It's like Shaba or something.
Something like that.
Shizna. Yeah.
With like a long
Shizna. Like yeah, hurdle. With like four A's. Shizna.
Shizna.
He recognizes that as a teaching of Shizna, and he's like, no, it's Mickey Mouse, and there's like a line about how truth is truth, and, you know, some things are universal.
Well, and he says, Mickey Mouse, was he a great teacher on your planet? Like, yeah, something like that. And so later, yeah. Willis says something about Shizma or whatever their like teacher is, their prophet is. And Alistair, do you remember what Jerry says about Mickey Mouse?
Something like weird and like stuff. What was it?
You don't remember any of it?
Your Mickey Mouse is fat or something? Whatever it's called.
Yeah, fat or something.
It's a bad.
No, because I do, because what he says, Shizma. Willis says something about, I guess it's spelled Shizmar, so Shizma is something about him being awful. And then Jerry says to him, Earthman, your Mickey Mouse is one big stupid dope.
And then later they're having an argument and Jerry's like, perhaps you forgot what you said about Shizma. And he's like, perhaps you forgot what you said about Mickey Mouse.
And he gets like really shamed. He's like, I'm sorry about what I said about Mickey Mouse. I should not have said that.
It was wrong.
That's such a great moment. And it shows how like wonderfully loaded the screenplay is, like on multiple levels at any given point. Like, whenever they're talking, there's three or four things going on at once. You know, like that's a reference to a previous joke. It's also a moment where Willis is using something against Jerry that he knows he can't use against Jerry because it's ridiculous to be upset about Mickey Mouse. And yet Jerry actually is apologetic. And then Willis kind of feels closer to him for how upset Jerry is by having insulted him. There's so much going on in that one moment. It's beautiful. This whole movie's really beautiful.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, really well put together, really well structured.
There's also like other movies, like this movie, intros to other things.
Intro? Like introduce?
Yeah.
Oh, like, okay.
In this one, there's Mickey Mouse.
Oh, like reference?
Yeah.
Okay, I see what you mean. So they reference pop culture things that are outside of the movie itself.
Like Mickey Mouse.
Gotcha.
Cause that's,
and then Pepsi is in there.
Yeah, Pepsi. Reference to Pepsi.
What if Shizbai is not a deity or a philosopher, but is kind of like a Mickey Mouse character on Drac?
So it's kind
he's
of...
He's kind of like the book is kind of maybe like a comic book or, you know, just like a piece of fiction that has these good ideas in it.
Well, what if the Dracs are like the one creatures in the like squid octopus creatures in Galaxy Quest? Like they can't tell the difference between media and reality.
Oh yeah.
So this Shizma is like some off world, you know, some other races, because of course they've spread out across the galaxy. So what if they encounter media for the first time and they're like, oh, it's very wise, but it's really like that planet's version of a Mickey Mouse. It's some kind of cartoon, you know, a pig turtle cockroach thing.
You know, that goes Gilligan's Island.
Yeah.
I'm a big Mickey Mouse. I'm a Mickey Mouse. That's what it says. I'm a Mickey Mouse. I'm a Mickey Mouse.
Is that how Mickey Mouse sounds? I don't think you've seen enough Mickey Mouse cartoons. I think that's what this proves.
I've only seen one.
You've let him down as a parent, clearly.
I guess you don't watch much Mickey Mouse.
I've only watched one.
Mickey's Christmas Carol.
I know you guys have, like, Disney cartoon box set things that must have tons of Mickey Mouse stuff.
And I have Mickey Mouse. I've only watched, like, one of them. That's all I've watched of Mickey
Mouse. I guess we'll have to go back and watch some of the older ones, huh?
Yeah. Hey, Joe?
Yes?
Do you want to talk about, like, the miniatures in bat paintings?
Yeah, absolutely, because I noticed at this time that it looks really cool, the way they create these settings. So what are your thoughts on that, Al?
They actually look like matte paintings and miniature.
Yeah.
And you could see the miniatures.
Mm-hmm. If you were really looking for it, but if you weren't, do you think it would be noticeable? Like, if you were just watching the movie, do you think it all looks really nice together?
Yeah, you would still see if you weren't just watching the movie, you would still recognize that there was miniatures and matte paintings.
Maybe. But do you think it all looks good together?
Yeah.
Because I think it looks really wonderful and science fiction-y, like, to the extreme. I think it looks all really beautiful together.
Planets... matte paintings, it looks just like the regular planet that doesn't exist, I don't think.
Yeah, they do. They have the planets and the sky and stuff are all matte painted, but they're constantly mixing the techniques there. They'll have matte painting and then some miniatures and then actual set, like, you know, small in the shot so that it all kind of flows seamlessly together. You put them all in one shot and it's hard to tell where one ends and the other begins.
Remember that shot was the matte painting and the miniature and the way back? Remember
that's a lot of shots.
But you know, Jeff, the one. You know, the good one.
Which one in particular?
The one was like at the... when you like see him like on the gravestone and you can... like, not before the gravestone. Sorry. Like, on just this... after the gravestone, I think.
Oh, you mean where, like, Willis is on the ledge looking down at Jerry and Jerry's ship by the little lake? That part? And then you can see the skyline and there's, like, the matte painting, but then there's, like, the set with Jerry and Willis there? Is that what you're talking about?
No, it was, like, it was not there. It was just rocks.
Okay.
And there was, like, those... like in volcano looking things.
Okay. So clearly, at least, even though I may not know exactly what shot you're talking about, and Joe may not either, at least I think we can tell from this that something there stuck out to you. That it was, you know, beautiful, interesting, noteworthy for some reason.
Yeah, that was when I was talking about the matte paintings and stuff. That was the only part when I... got the matte paintings.
Oh, because, yeah, right. Okay, I know what you're talking about, because you did point out to me, hey, Dad, there's a matte painting right there, you can tell. But for the rest of the movie, there's a ton of matte paintings that you didn't point out, because, well, one, the story's so good, you get sucked up into it. You know, I mean, you get really absorbed in this story about these characters.
Well, it is a sad one, too.
It is a sad story. You know, it's really emotional. But, two, the special effects are really good.
Yeah.
But you wanted to talk about how sad it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you think it's sad, Joe?
Absolutely. You know, we talked, like, about Joey's death, even for being such a brief performance, is really powerful. Jerry's death, of course, is crushing.
Yeah, you could see, like, those flying bots hitting his face.
Joey? You mean in the beginning when the console explodes in his face?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know that he's gonna be dead.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally Willis's fault.
Yeah, because he shouldn't be going after that dude.
Yeah, I mean, they went into the atmosphere. I don't know what he thought was going to happen.
I don't know.
Especially because Joey's like, we don't have the energy for this. Our engines are burning up. We're going to burn up. We're going to die. And then, yeah, that's exactly what happens.
Huh. Yeah, that's a good point.
Joey lives. Both of them lives. But the guy who gets shot in the face dies.
Joey is the kid who dies. Jerry is the... Jerry's the Drac.
Yeah, but both of Jerry, the Joey, humans,
and then there's Johnny later.
Both of the guys on the ship die in the movie. They don't live for the movie. They just die.
Oh, Willis. Willis. Well, yeah, Willis dies at one point. That's true.
Because he gets shot off.
Yeah, but then, but he's not quite dead. They think he's dead, and they're going to launch his body into space.
Nah.
But he's not.
Yeah, it was unclear on how his body's recovered.
Well, I think just, like, Earth forces pick him up somehow, and then they're just like, yeah this guy's totally dead. Right? Because what happens... So, while Willis is raising Zamis on the planet by themselves, the scavengers come back, and they have, like Joe said... slaves that are Drax. And so Willis tells, you know, Zamis, don't go anywhere near them. They may be humans, but they're bad humans. They, you know, they treat the Drax horribly, but Zamis is like 2 years old. So, you know, doesn't quite understand the nuances of this stuff and gets himself captured by the slaver miner scavengers.
Mm-hmm.
And Willis gets shot down when he goes to save him. Mm-hmm. Gets shot.
Yeah,
like a bunch of times, and is left for dead, and is apparently so dead that in the future they can't pick up any vital signs, but he's not so dead that he can't just come back to life on his own.
Yeah, but he's still tall.
Yeah, because they do like these conveyor belt funerals, which I thought was an interesting scene.
Yeah.
Like this guy's agnostic, he doesn't get any music, this guy's Catholic, you know. We'll have this recording of the Hail Mary or whatever. I mean, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, and it's very in keeping, I think, with the idea that Americanism is sort of what took over the planet. You know?
Absolutely.
That like this, you know, oh, well, this guy didn't necessarily believe in God. Just launch him into space. Nobody cares. You know, it's like still like, you know, very strong Christian emphasis on the universe in spite of the fact that they clearly have an incredible understanding of the complexity of the universe.
Yeah, but even like the religious ones, they didn't seem to care about.
No, they didn't care
either. I don't know if they were looking for a specific branch of Christianity that they do choose to care about, or maybe those bodies go to a separate chapel anyway.
Well, when they're going to launch Willis into space, they declare him Protestant, and they're like, well, let's just call him Protestant and we'll give him a song. So I think Protestant is like the preferred.
I just picked up something. Almost all four of the people die. Almost.
All four of the people who land on the planet?
No, Zamis doesn't die.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is they almost do.
Yeah.
So,
but Zamis,
Joey dies, Jerry dies, Willis very nearly dies. He's so close to death that the future people can't tell that he's actually not dead, but which still blows my mind. This, like, their medical equipment must be garbage on that space station.
The last two, you don't know if they're dead or not dead.
Yeah, Zamis as well.
Yeah, he's alive, but you don't know if his
Willis?
Uncle.
Yeah.
You don't know if his uncle is actually alive or he's just speaking.
I'm not sure what you mean by that. Because if he's speaking, I would say he's pretty clearly alive. Unless you're saying you think maybe he's like a zombie or something. So we'll call that a maybe. He's a maybe zombie.
He's a dead zombie. I don't know.
No, he's just alive. He's just alive. They think he's dead, but he's
just not. Alive. Yeah. Yeah. He's just mistakenly dead.
Which, again, I don't know how they did that if they're in the future and theoretically they have better medical technology than we do now. They should be able to tell he's a little bit alive.
Yeah.
Unless they just didn't care.
It's a bit weird of a mistake to make.
But then Zamis seems to be dead too, because the slavers have him in a cage, like in the floor of a room when Willis shows back up to save him.
Do we have any idea how much time Zamis is held prisoner? Because Willis has to recover.
No, I have no idea.
And get a haircut.
Because they say something
he's apparently
about...
He's apparently been trying to petition his superiors to let him go. And then he just takes off on his own.
Well, they kind of think he's a spy, too, because he shows up and in this catatonic state of near death, or back from the dead, he's speaking Drac fluently. Yeah. Which they could have explored more and would have been interesting, but I like that the movie's very focused on the characters. And so even though the sort of political machinations of, you know, how they'd go about dealing with somebody who may be a Drax spy isn't addressed, which would have been interesting, it's unimportant to the journey of Willis as a person who vehemently hated the Drax just for existing and not being, like, American slash earthly enough to be somebody who, you know, was kind of open to family. And that's really his journey is, you know, accepting people into... And that's really his journey, is accepting people into his life.
And I think it's interesting, like, once Jerry dies and he becomes Zamis's de facto father, that suddenly being rescued is a terrible thing. Because, you know, scavengers could show up and kill them and take Zamis, like, you know, that's what happens. But even if the military shows up, they're going to treat Zamis as an enemy combatant. So, he's resolved now just to live on this planet and raise this kid forever.
Yeah. I mean, I think for him at that point, the best case scenario is to be rescued by the Drax.
Yeah. And, you know, he would conceivably be a prisoner of war in that scenario as well.
But, you know, I think
But Zamis would be safe.
Zamis would be safe, but his knowledge of the Drac language would at least be enough that he could potentially convince them that he knows the Jareba line. You know, he knows how to, you know, read their holy text. You know, that he maybe isn't all ill-intentioned. Like, I think he would still try to get Zamis in front of the Holy Council. You know, I think that really is his goal at that point, is once Jerry's dead, you know, raise Zamis and get him there. You know, and maybe it's sort of, maybe it's something that he half-heartedly promises, but at least once the prospect of losing Zamis becomes real, I think he becomes, like, resolved to do whatever he can for Zamis.
Yeah, and I like that, you know, in the very end, when, He goes before this council and he sings the song, recites the line of Jareva, and he's added to it. He's added to the Jareva lineage.
Oh, that makes me cry every time.
I know. It's so great.
When Zamis has its own child, and apologies, I think I've called Zamis he, but when Zamis has its own child as an adult, he takes his child to sing the Jareva line in front of the Holy Council. And they add Willis to it, which is just so touching. You know, that's really the character arc there. And it's a beautiful way to go out on the end of this movie. Al, how did you feel about their relationship, Willis and Zamis?
I like it.
You like it? That's all? Yeah. Only thought? Okay. Anything else, I mean, that you wanted to say about the movie, Alistair? Monsters, Drax, space fighting.
If this were CadaverCast, we would do the Beastly Best. Do you have a favorite monster moment?
I do. Yes, I do.
Okay.
What is it?
Those alligator things. Those are so cool looking, right?
Mm-hmm.
The things that live underground?
The like...
Sarlacc Rancor?
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever they are.
In which moment, though? Which moment in particular?
Both of them.
Both of the attacks?
They both get attacked. Because there's only two in the movie.
Yeah, two of those creatures? Yeah.
We don't see, like, all of them. We only see two. Because the one eats the turtle pig thing, whatever it is. And then that one tries to... The same one tries to eat the human. And then his alien friend destroys him. Then the other one tries to get the alien friend. Then the human destroys it.
So yeah, well, kind of half. I mean, he at least slows it down. I think that's the coolest moment for sure, is when it comes up into the tent, or the shelter, while they're sleeping. That's,
yeah.
I mean, that's a moment where you're like, oh no. Because they're barely alive at that point anyway. Because they're freezing to death. And then this thing comes up into their shelter.
The meteor shelter.
Yeah, in the meteor shelter. Which, I mean, was fortunate for them because...
They're not windproof.
They're not windproof at all, no. But it was kind of fortunate that they got attacked by that thing, because after they run out, you know, they Willis throws hot coals into the mouth of the creature and gets it off of Jerry, and they run out of the shelter, and then one of those giant like rock trees immediately falls on the shelter.
Oh yeah, good point.
So they'd have been killed there no matter what.
I like the one where Willis is out hunting and the thing gets him.
Yeah, the first time.
And he's screaming for Jerry to help, mostly because the effect of his leg wound.
Oh, that's nasty.
Looks so gnarly. Yeah.
Because it like basically grinds through his pants.
Yeah, it starts to like rip his leg off.
And that thing is really well, in terms of like screenwriting stuff, the planting and payoff of that monster is excellent.
Yeah.
Because they show it just as like you would in any movie where you end up on a distant planet somewhere. You show just creatures doing their normal things. That gives the audience an idea of what the planet is like. You know, and here we see that little thing running around, the little cockroach pig turtle thing. And we're like, oh, that's a weird looking little thing, isn't it? And then it falls in a pit and then this horrible thing eats it. And you're like, oh, no, this isn't a good planet. And they could have left it at that. We could have never seen that thing again. And it would have served its purpose entirely. But it comes back two other times, which is really nice because that threat has already been set up. They don't have to introduce new monsters, new threats, you know, but that constant threat of that thing being underground is then there.
It's just those two monsters show up.
Yeah, we don't see any other creatures. That is interesting.
It's only that snake thing.
Well, and the slugs.
And the slugs, yeah, those slugs. They aren't really monsters. They're just slugs. They're really
that when Jerry feeds Willis that slug.
Yeah, those aren't monsters. They're just regular slugs that are different colors.
Oh, that's right. And then later he's cooking them for Jerry. He's like, hey, you remember where I got a taste for these things?
I love it when Jerry feeds it to him, though, because it's, you know, it's when they're still enemies and he's got Willis tied up. And it's just like, yeah, you want food? Not going to have any of my food. I'll give you this slug, though. And he tries to be all hard and act like he's, you know, this really strong soldier by not barfing while eating this nasty slug.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eating slugs are disgusting. Nobody ever eats them.
You have. Every night while you're sleeping, I creep into your room and put a slug in your mouth.
And I was never open at night.
Don't worry, Al. He used to do it to me, too. It's a really good source of fiber.
You need the protein.
Every time I sneak into a bedroom, I put a slug in your face. Put a slug in your face. Put a slug in your face. Then you eat.
That's going to top the charts, boy. I tell you what.
That's the best song ever.
Again, put a slug on your face.
Joe, I think you found your stinger for this episode.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Put a slug on your face.
I mean,
face.
It would be a CadaverCast stinger for sure.
Maybe just cut it out of Joe's podcast and put it on
yours. Oh, steal it for our show? Al wants to justify it because this is a CadaverCast crossover, so we can just steal whatever we want. We put out our own edit of this same episode.
It's as much yours as it is mine.
How about we just cut your parts off then? Record ours, put it in, steal your episode, put it in ours.
You're already recording your side of it, so yeah, I guess you could do that. Yeah,
we just cut Joe out. Be like, it's weird, isn't it? How did Joe manage such a crazy editing trick as to add himself into our episode?
Oh, I thought it was interesting, going back to the movie, that Drax reproduce without choice. It just happens when it happens. Yeah.
Which makes it a kind of a sort of a magical, kind of a spiritual thing for them, you know, that their bodies are just like, it is time. And I think understanding how they reproduce helps you understand who they are spiritually.
Yeah, it's interesting. It must create a completely different culture around having kids if it's not by choice anymore.
Yeah, because it's not a thing that can be like, oh, well, you know, that is like accidental or something like that, you know, like parents not planning to have kids and then they do or whatever. It's this thing that your body does on its own. And yeah, clearly it's really, really important to them.
Is there anything else, Al, that you like about the movie that you want to talk about?
Do you want to talk about anything? It's your podcast.
I know. I'm asking if you have anything else that you remember.
Do you want to talk about anything?
I was thinking about the ending where we suddenly have a new narrator talking about Willis being added to the line of Jareva.
Like where the one takes over Willis's line?
Yeah, like suddenly someone else is narrating the movie. Like Willis has been narrating the entire movie. And then at the very end, when we're talking about Willis being added to the line of Jareva, it's a new narrator, which makes sense because Willis would have been gone. This is when Zamis' child is adding its line, its name to the lineage. So, but I thought that was cool.
Yeah, me too.
I also noticed that one of the Drac slaves that Willis is talking to, looking for Zamis, speaks very good English.
Yeah, he's.
And it made me wonder.
He says he's the only one who can.
Yeah, it made me wonder what his story is. Like, where's that
like
coming
the
from?
King.
Well, I don't. Whoa, if they, you think they kidnapped the king, that's an interesting storyline that they. If they'd explored that, holy cow, we'd have had another 2 hours.
Yeah. I'm the king of the Drax, and I'm now a slave for these hillbillies.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Wow. That's dark.
But he's an old fella. Like, he is one wrinkly old Drac.
Yeah.
I wonder if he, like, predates the war and, you know, was living on one of these planets when humans started to invade and take things over and in the early days was trying to work with them.
He's like a Drac Yoda. He was just on a, yeah. on a planet somewhere just living by himself and they showed up and he's like, hey. And they slapped the cuffs on.
You got a neat way of talking. Let me learn that from you.
I like the idea that he may have learned English while just being a slave.
Yeah, that's also possible, just from being around the slavers.
All of them know it from being a slave. Because they have to know the language of human to talk to the human, but they really don't because humans don't like Drakes.
Drax. But they probably, know a word.
I'm sure they know, like, basic commands.
Like,
yeah,
move,
I'm sure they know basic.
Dig.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Work. I mean, they would have to know a couple words for sure, but.
But this guy speaks English.
Yeah.
Or a guy. This Drax speaks English.
It's a guy.
Well, no, they don't. They don't have genders.
They're all just guys.
No, they're not guys. They're called, they're not called boys or girls. They're not called he or she. They're called it. They don't have boys and girls. There's just one kind of Drac.
Well, they all sound and look like boys.
No, I mean they look like amphibious frog creature things. They don't look like boys. I mean, they look a little
like Silurians
for sure. I mean, you look very much like a Drac. You got the pointy head.
Yeah, the cracked lizard skin. I mean,
yeah, the tail.
That's all I could think about
the
whole time.
The
3 fingers on each hand.
Not 5.
Oh, you got 4 or 5? Alistair, get 4 or 5?
No, 5.
Alistair, ugly head.
Daddy, ugly head.
Oh, you're Mickey Mouse. The big, stupid dope.
Al, do you want me to come to Chicago and teach you how to play football like Willis teaches Zamis?
Get like a big loaf of bread.
He makes a pretty good football. Like, he must have made that out of something.
It looked like he just grabbed like a mushroom off the ground or something.
Yeah, like a giant mushroom. There's
like a football-shaped mushroom.
It's more like oblong, like pillow-looking thing.
I think that's about it for me. Do you have anything, Jeff?
Not me.
No, that's pretty much all I had to say about it, I guess. I think it's a wonderful movie. It's definitely not a movie that if anybody listens to this show and always goes, should I look into this stuff? They've talked about a lot of bad things. Freddy got fingered and all that kind of stuff. Like, what kind should I watch any of these movies? This one, yes. Like, there's nothing that anybody should be guilty over with this movie. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, there's nothing really wrong with that. I just think it's become obscure and maybe people are not aware of it.
And it's directed by Wolfgang Petersen, who other people would know for directing never-ending story.
Oh, sure.
So it's got a bit of that fantasy feel to it, especially in the end with that narration.
It does. It definitely feels more like fantasy than sci-fi in a lot of places.
Yeah, like I said, it's just kind of it's like an epic journey, like, you know, around this planet.
Very cool movie, and I appreciate you guys getting it for me. Thanks. A little while ago.
You say you're welcome.
Sorry, you're welcome.
Well, Al, I don't know if you remember, but how we wrap up "quote unquote" guilty is by talking about the guilty pleasures of characters in the movie.
You do it.
I don't think Al understands the concept of a guilty pleasure.
That's okay. Me and your dad will do it. Maybe if you have thoughts, you can chime in.
Sound good?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Jeff, you can pick any character for me.
You get Johnny.
I don't know who Johnny is.
The brother of the scavenger, the guy who gets the arrow through his neck.
Okay. I barely remember this person.
He's the one with the shotgun, and Brian James and Johnny come out. And they're chasing around Zamis, and then Willis shoots him in the neck with an arrow.
Oh, okay, yes. Other than him getting shot in the neck with an arrow, I'm not sure I remember him at all.
That's all he does in the movie. He goes,
"Okay,
get that woggy. I'm gonna shoot him," and then he gets shot. Okay. Or we could just do Jerry and Willis if you want.
No. Now you can do the Rancor pit monster.
Oh, okay.
What's its guilty pleasure?
Oh, I got that. I know that automatically.
I'm a Rancor, but they have guilty pleasure.
All right, so the Rancor thing.
Is that a theme song for our guilty pleasure segment?
No, just for the Rancor's guilty pleasure. I'm a Rancor, I've got guilty pleasures.
All right, what do you got? All right,
so the Rancor... Its guilty pleasure is actually learning to read the sacred tome of the Drax. And that's why it's underneath the hut, is it's been listening from underground, learning the language, learning the philosophy. And it's like learning about, you know, if somebody does evil to you, you don't do evil back to them. And it's like, and it's learning a lot, and it's feeling very spiritually enlightened. But then Willis disappears and goes on his, like, spirit quest, and they stop talking, and then he's just underground, like, waiting for, like, so long, trying to learn the rest of the book, and then nobody talks, because Willis is just gone, and so when he attacks, it's out of spite, because, you know, he was learning something, and he felt like he was improving as a being, and then it just stopped one day, so he's like, you know what, these words were all great and stuff, but you guys let me down, so now I gotta eat you.
It could be out of spite. It could be out of desperation. Like he was watching his favorite TV show and it suddenly stopped. And he was like, well, you know, it started the TV show, them having their lives threatened.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So if I threaten their lives a little bit, maybe they'll go back to the book.
Or maybe it figures if it eats them, it can learn the rest of the book through osmosis.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. What does that mean?
Like it could soak it up. It would be like eating a creature and then learning everything it knows. Like if we eat a cheeseburger and suddenly we know what it's like to eat grass in a field.
Sounds pretty cool.
A human with a can that has Pepsi on it. We just drink it and we'll know how it feels to throw a Pepsi can.
Oh, to be a Pepsi can and be thrown around?
If we eat a cow... we will know everything that a cow knows.
Exactly. So, Joe, what do you got for Johnny Boy?
Okay. I think that Johnny likes to take Drax slaves and put them against a tree with an apple on their head and try to William Tell them, but he's really bad at it, so that his death is more poetic than anything. Oh,
I like it. So it's not just a hillbilly getting shot in the neck. It's actually... you know, poetic justice.
Karma. Yeah, yeah.
I like it.
So, yeah. That's all I got. That's all I got for Johnny.
Okay, done. Now the podcast is ending. Okay.
Al's ready.
Thanks for being on the podcast, Al.
You're welcome.
Do you want to plug your podcast?
No.
Just tell us about it.
No, yeah. No. I can tell Joe's audience about our podcast. What's it called? What do we do?
We are from CadaverCast. And if you want to watch more...
Listen
to more, not just Joe's silly podcast. Listen to ours.
Yeah, listen to our silly podcast. What do we do on our silly podcast?
We talk about monster movies that are mostly black and white.
Mostly black and white monster movies. Yep. Yeah, that's a fair assessment.
And where do we find you on Twitter and the Facebook?
Yeah, where's our Twitter? Do you remember that? No. You sure do. At? No, you don't got it? Okay. We're on Twitter at cadaver_cast. And we're on Facebook at...
CadaverCast.
Yes, there you go.
Nailed it.
Twitter, cadaver_cast. Facebook, cadavercast, just one word.
One word.
And you can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, Podkicker, basically about anywhere you can find podcasts, we are there.
Cool.
Also, one word.
And October is going to be bananas for us. I assume this is going up in October?
Actually, this is probably going to be sooner. This might be like our next episode.
Oh, okay. Well, then October of this year, 2017, is going to be crazy for us. We're putting out 4 new episodes.
Yeah.
And then 2 on Patreon, one from us and then one from Cinemuck that I put up on Patreon. So
awesome.
A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
If you listen to no other episode, tune in for our October 2017 Friday the 13th special. I won't explain what we do in it, but it is one of the craziest episodes we've ever done.
I'm very much looking forward to it, but I know what you guys did, so it's gonna be a blast.
Okay.
Well, our Twitter's at @QuoteGuilty. My Twitter's at @Play_Architect. You can find us at facebook.com/quoteunquoteguilty. Email us at quoteunquoteguilty@gmail.com, or contribute to our Patreon page at patreon.com/wordsalad, which also supports CadaverCast, Dealing with Philip, and the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews. You can also check out my other little short-form podcast, Word Salad Radio, which we put together a series of creative endeavors, and that's been fun so far, and we're trying to branch out. But yeah, it's all good. It's all fun.
Is that true, Al? Is it all fun?
Yep, I guess.
All right, well, that's it from us. Burn you, mothers.
Joe Ugly Head.
This podcast is a Word Salad production. Wonky Oranges, Righteous Dragons.
Okay, done. Now the podcast is ending.